Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
An Erios original.
Okay, we should do our Ask Camilla.
Hi, if you could just open up that podcast app and do both of these things. Number one, subscribe. Mm-hmm. Number two, rate us 5 stars. Both these things are important. They're good for us. They're good for you because we can keep doing the pod and you'll feel great about it and we'll feel great about it and everyone should feel great.
Yes.
So just subscribe and give us 5 stars.
The world is burning and the least you can do is support women of color.
Absolutely.
Excellent. This is more point. Of a demand.
Yes.
Than an ask.
Yes.
It's a demand. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Love you.
Welcome to Foxy Browns. I'm Priyanka.
I'm Camilla, and this is a podcast that navigates beauty and wellness from our perspectives as women of color.
This week, like every week, we're talking stuff and things, tips and tricks, and deconstructing Western beauty standards. And we are joined by special guest, America Ferreira.
Hi.
We tried to think of an introduction, yeah. But we were like, is that insulting?
But kind of, like, America is literally America's sweetheart, so I don't know how intro.
We're just vamping now. Thank you for joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm a fan.
Well, we're a fan of yours, even though my husband has been trying to keep us apart for years.
I mean, over a decade.
It's such a long time ago. My husband, Rodney, my beloved, he wrote a pilot many years ago for HBO called 5:15 an Hour, and the stars were America and Retta, who we also had on.
That's where I met Retta, and we've had like a lovely friendship ever since. But I was like 19 when I did that pilot.
You were?
Yeah, and Rodney was like an old man to me, but now looking back, he was 29, maybe. Like, he wasn't even 30.
Yeah, what year was it?
Pilot. It was 2004, I think.
So he was 30.
So he was like barely 30. Old man. And I was like, he's so old. Sorry, Rodney.
But what an experience. He loved Richard Linklater directed it.
Richard Linklater. And you know what's funny is, well, we didn't get picked up because they picked up some show called Entourage instead of us.
Which is the funniest. You know. Like, they couldn't be more diametrically opposed.
I was saying that I accidentally had an entire Entourage, like, a marathon yesterday for no good reason whatsoever. And it's still ridiculous, but with still some moments of levity. Still fun. But yes.
It's funny because the show I'm on now, Superstore, like, has a lot elements. Of 5:15 an hour in it. I'm like, this is that show just for broadcast, not cable. And also, like, I guess now we're ready for it. It was like 5:15 was ahead of its time.
Rodney's a visionary, and I always tell him this. I'm like, you were always selling things 5 years before anyone is ready to hear them. Yeah. Like, always, always, always. Everyone's like, where's the, you know what I'd love to see? A space movie about blah, blah, blah. And he's like, let me dust here. Like, here you go.
I did that.
He did everything, always. But we are so excited to have you on, and we wanted to talk about, well, we always start off talking about stuff and things, which is like products, treatments,
experiences and things that, you know, or things that you've tried and want to, and, you know, warn other people not to, not to use, like steer clears. What are you enjoying using or doing this week?
So I'm not like a big product person. Mm-hmm. I'm really bad at shopping, and plus I am extremely ridiculously privileged in that people send me things, but most of the time I end up like giving it away to my sisters because I don't.
A generous sibling.
I always say yes because I know there's someone to give it to.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't like admit that because then people will just never send me things.
No, because they want, I mean, not only do they want you to take, I used to be an agent, I know I've already told you, but let me tell you how it works. They want you to send stuff, but then they also want you to like share it with people to be like, I endorse this product, sisters. Yeah. Go tell everyone else.
Yes. I wish I was better at that, but I'm just like not. Anytime I'm like, oh, I want to post about something, I'm like, it's just not my voice and I can't do it.
You don't have to do it.
But I will say that I when I got pregnant 2 years ago, I got really into acupuncture.
Oh, that's great.
Someone recommended it. Yes. Like, because yeah. I had like the sciatica. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me too. Stuff.
I don't understand how it works. I don't but it works. Acupuncture. But it just does. But it just works.
Magic. Yeah. I mean, it's magic.
It's witchcraft.
And it's, but also it's like the thing that makes the most sense where it's like, oh, you mean like my whole body's connected and like
who knew?
Blood flows through my entire body and you're just going to help my blood flow better. Anyway, it was magic. And I love my acupuncturist. And she like a year in was, I was talking to her about like facials and whatever. And she's like, oh, I could do an acupuncture facial. What? And I was like, what is that? What do you mean?
Tell is she me here? Or is she in New York?
She is here sometimes. She's actually based in Atlanta. And she comes back to LA. And she,
I would fly to Atlanta.
she'll be here like once a month. But I've gotten an acupuncture facial twice.
And what is
it? It's amazing. But it's one of those things like you have to do a few times before you're like, oh, it really like has softened that line or whatever it is. But the way she explains it is, you know, where like, and I don't know a lot about Botox, but here's my layman interpretation, is that she was saying like Botox actually like messes up your own body's ability to create collagen, which is the thing that like we want.
It deadens everything.
Yes. It like, and ruins you and like makes you beholden to like Botox to look like a normal person.
It's literally like paralysis.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And acupuncture boosts your own ability to create more collagen. Mm-hmm. So the more you do it, like it's just this effect that keeps building where like you're reminding your face how to produce collagen and then you age backwards.
How have I never thought about this?
I am so mad at myself.
I hate when there's a gap in our knowledge.
I have a picture that I don't please. Show anyone that I will show you guys of like the needles in my face. Yeah. And you want to see what it looks like.
How have I never thought? And I am like a big believer, guys, in acupuncture for everything. The reason that a lot of us, I think, find it during pregnancy is because you can't have any medication during pregnancy and no treatments. Right. So even like I have a headache or I have this back pain, like you cannot take a painkiller. So you got to go to like,
oh my God. Wow.
And that's so not even with needles. All of them in my face. There's usually more.
That's incredible.
And like, I feel like I've undergone... Like, I feel like extractions and facials are, like, the most painful.
So painful. Yeah.
That, like, this was nothing compared to, like, extractions. Cool.
What were the first few, like, what was the first thing that you noticed that it had improved in your skin after doing it?
So, it was just, like, a glow.
Your face
like, truly,
amazing.
Like, it just, like,
the indescribable
blood is
glow.
And
you were also going to look young forever. I mean, that's the benefit of, like, you know... us all not being redheads, you know?
I think the gene line in the women in my family is pretty good.
Let's be grateful.
I am starting to, like, you know, there's that turn where you all of a sudden go like, I kind of look like really my aunt or like mine, but like, why is that?
Yeah. The skin's not really moving back as quickly as it used to.
But I am committed to not, hating myself.
Feels
like a good thing to be thinking about.
I remember saying to her like, oh, is that silly to like take a treatment where I could be treating my whole body and do it for my face? Is that like stupid and vain? And she's like, oh no, your whole health and well-being will benefit from the facial acupuncture. So I'm still getting the immunity boosting benefits because there are all these points in your like skull and your jaw and your face that relate to everything else. Yeah. So you're doing a facial acupuncture treatment, but you're getting like the whole body benefit.
You know, we did an episode where we talked about reflexology and it was kind of the same thing. It was like, why does this work and why do I feel better? I don't know, but it works. Like, I don't know what it is, but
and
I feel
and if
better.
You ask, they'll tell you. Like, my acupuncturist is like lovely, like the loveliest human. And she started Chinese medicine because she herself got sick, like diagnosed, and this was how she like made herself better. And it's not like it feels like voodoo magic, but every time I'm just like, explain this to me again, why this works, and then she does, and I'm like, that is not magic. Like it just makes sense, but it feels like magic when when you go, oh, my back hurts, and she sticks something in your foot, and you're like, my back no longer hurts, like, yeah, immediately.
No, absolutely. During my pregnancy, I had this, both, I've had two kids, so every symptom, every single symptom from, I was nauseous like crazy with the first baby, then the second baby, I had, my thyroid got really swollen, and I had like this weird temporary goiter.
Oh my God.
Acupuncture got rid of that, and then the pain, various pains, my hair was, like, everything. I was like, I don't know, Dr. Jing, and she was like, I'll take care of you. I'd like go in and she would fully, it'd be like 4 or 5 sessions, a tea, and I'm done. Yeah.
She helped bring my milk in after I had a baby.
Really?
Like I was doing okay, but I remember there was a moment when I went back to hard. I went back to work 10 weeks after I had him, and immediately, like, I got on my feet and my milk supply went down, because your body, like, just wants to be doing that. And I was, like, not quite ready to stop. And she, like, put in these points, and I just felt the milk rush into my boobs. I was like, what? All the, like, booby bars and the things they tell you to, like,
the
eat
oatmeal
and buy
cookies
and do,
and the pumping and the
and she like brought my milk back in. It was amazing. I'm a true believer.
Acupuncture facial.
Damn, I'm so mad at myself that I hadn't considered this before.
We're gonna find one in out. We're gonna find. Yeah. We're gonna figure this out. What was your Cam? What was your thing? Stefan thing.
Daniel Kaluuya, who I've known for a very long time. We did Skins together a very long time. But his mum makes a moisturizer in her kitchen. And it's crazy. I don't know what's in it. She's a scientist. She basically,
where's she from?
She's Ugandan. Mm-hmm. And basically, so this, I think that there is some element that there are a lot of herbs that she does bring back from Uganda that she incorporates into this moisturizer. It smells incredible. Every time I wear it in public, a stranger will say to me, it says, wow, you smell amazing, which is usually a creepy thing to hear from someone, but it's nice. And it is so rich, and it's also like an oddly healing cream. And so for things like, you know, kind of chapped skin, or if I'm having like a weird little kind of irritation, it just does everything. And she doesn't monetize it, which is hilarious. So she makes it for Daniel and like 10 of his friends. And for 10 of his friends. But you look at Daniel's skin.
It's amazing.
He has the most incredible skin of all time. It's ridiculous.
So that's the only way to get it, is to become Daniel's friend.
So essentially you have to be Daniel's friend. She makes it for like 10 people. I don't know who the other 10 people are.
So it's like not fair that you're telling anybody about this.
We can't include a link.
Because I'm talking about it to try and convince them to make it a product that they will launch and share with everyone else, because it's amazing. It's the only thing I can use, and like I'll put it on like an 11-hour flight, and it's the only thing, it'll keep me moisturized the entire time.
Is it daily?
No, it's like, it's just when my skin really needs it. And also I try and make it last, because it has to come from England and it just shows up in this like black pot with no markings on it, and I'm just so careful about rationing it until I get like the next re-up. It's like the wire, and I'm waiting for like a new brick of cocaine. But it's like the one beauty product I don't share with anyone. That, like, it's mine.
Beyond exclusive. I don't even know what to say about that.
But I just really want Daniel and his mom to make this moisturizer.
We should get them and deal
everyone.
With the Tracy or Ellis Ross company.
That's exactly what we should do. Daniel, let's make it happen. We need to do it. We need the cream for everyone.
My special thing, which I was just really grateful for this week, just being a parent and my life is a shambles, was Drea Lewerk, who was the girl who cuts my hair. Drea and I met like 15 years ago when I was like a single poor lady living in mid-city, and I met her at a salon on Abikini, and she cut my hair, and she was like, it's cheaper if I come over. And ever since then, she's come over to cut my hair and color my hair. And she has seen me through a boyfriend who I married and then had 2 kids with. And she now cuts my son's hair. And last time she was over, my son looked at Drea and goes, you're going to cut her hair next, like pointing to the baby. And she was like, yeah, give it like 6 months. And I just thought it was like the sweetest thing in the world. Oh, it saves so much time, by the way. You have never needed to probably to take a small child for a haircut?
I can't say I have.
How old is your kid?
He's only 15 months.
Yeah.
And I don't plan on cutting his hair for 18 years.
No. I still have like a Ziploc bag with like his first haircut hair. And I cried and cried and cried. Those baby curls. He was over 2.
It's like once way you over cut the two. Hair, then they look like
I know
they look like babies. Anymore.
I know. Every time he gets a haircut, Rodney cries. Like every single time, still, and he's over five. But the time she saves me, like when I add up, like I gotta go to the salon and do this. That's like a 3-hour thing. What she usually does is she comes over, she cuts it, she puts the foils in, and she leaves. That's a 30-minute process. And it's five to cut his hair. Like she is in and out in 45 minutes. And that saves me like a day, basically. And that stuff and that self-care, it's just when you're trying to figure out, and I just had a baby, you know, she's 11 months. When I'm trying, you know, it's so fun and so hard. when I'm trying to figure out like where I am, I was telling Ryan the other day, I was like, I feel like I'm disappearing again, you know, like that kind of thing. And like a haircut can make you feel so good. Like a woman who will come to your house and cut your hair for a reasonable fee is so it's such an asset. So Drea Lewick, I will just DM me and I'll send you her number. She's on the west side, and on the east side, I know there's a wonderful woman named Rebecca Dumoulin who does the same thing, and I have her number as well. So if you are in Los Angeles and looking for a home haircut that's going to make you feel great, let me know. So you have a 15-month-old, mm-hmm. and this is your first baby.
My first baby.
Your first in me. Aww. Yeah. Look at your face.
I know.
You're beaming.
I'm like obsessed in
That's
love.
Wonderful. It's such a wonderful time.
I know. I feel like people expect, look at that.
Yeah. I mean, that's an exception.
Cutie boy. That's really,
really cute.
It's nice and round. You're feeding
him. I feel like
people
expect you as a mother to complain. Mm-hmm. And like they want you to complain so they feel like... I don't know. Like misery loves company, but like I have very few complaints. Like I mean, not that it's not difficult, but it's like I just like he's so delicious. I love him so much. And it's I wasn't able to do anything for myself for like I think he was 13 months the first time I went to work out again. But I remember the first time I went and got my teeth cleaned after I had him. It had been like 6 months, like my teeth were falling out. And I literally sat in the chair as the nanny. I didn't want to leave him at home. The baby nurse was strolling him around the block. And I sat in the chair thinking of all the terrible things that could happen to him while he was strolling around the block, and thinking how it would be my fault because I chose to get my teeth clean instead of be with my child. And remember thinking like, this is bad. I can't sit and get my teeth clean like without feeling horrible.
It's a real
thing. And I was like, oh, this is real. This, and I didn't think I would be that person, but then you are.
Yeah.
And so it took me a while, and I feel like I'm still... He's 15 months now. I just started working out again, which has been so much more about mental health than anything else. Like just saying like, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Even if he's awake, I'm going to do this. Even if like I got off work early and should run home and like play. Like I didn't think it would be that hard for me. And it really, really is.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting as well. Because I mean, you are like, you know, someone who runs triathlons, like you're pretty athletic. Mm. And so, you know, feeling, you know, how has your relationship to exercise changed?
Yeah.
And is it, you know, has it, are there some things that are physically more difficult, or is it just the mental barrier of not wanting to, of, you know, kind of fighting the urge to only be with your son? Or are there also things that you are able to do now that you weren't able to do prior to having a child?
Yeah. Well, I was training for a triathlon when I got pregnant with him. So I was super fit.
Wow.
But I was very nauseous in the beginning and very tired. Oh, the exhaustion is ridiculous. And I just cold turkey stopped. Yeah. Like I just... stopped. Like something
you actually
had to
can't do it.
I couldn't do it. No. I remember I was directing an episode of my show and I was pregnant, early pregnant, and no one knew. Mm-hmm. No one knew. And I was like doing a location scout.
Like PTSD.
And on the lot. And my first AD was talking to me and I just felt this sudden urge to close my eyes and go to sleep. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I have to go to the bathroom. And he's like, okay. And I went into the prepping director office, closed and locked the door and fell asleep. Mm-hmm. Like it was so overwhelming, the exhaustion, that I was like, something has
early,
to
early, like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks in. Is
directing. Yeah. Like right away, directing, acting, doing organization work that for this organization my husband and I started, and like being pregnant, I was like, something has to give. And it was the working out. I mean, it just went out the window. Mm-hmm. And through my whole pregnancy, I didn't work out. I did do acupuncture. I did see an osteopath. I walked around the block, but like working out was off the table. And it took me till he was 14 months old. So it's like almost 2 full years of just like stopping. But, you know, I, again, like I have a very strong commitment in this portion of my life of like refusing to hate myself, refusing to be hard on myself, and sort of just saying like, my body did this amazing, amazing, incredible thing. Like I grew this human being and brought him into the world and then fed him off my body for 7 months while I was working and doing all kinds of things that, you know, I love feeling strong and I love like, you know, fitting into my smallest jeans or whatever, but I feel like I've finally, truly, genuinely, I'm in a place where, like, if I'm thicker or have more flesh on me at a certain point in my life, like, I want to be able to look in the mirror and say, like, that's beautiful too. Yeah. And I feel like culturally there it is bubbling up that feeling of, like, we're allowed to just be where we're at and love that. And that hasn't always been the case for me at all.
And I think there is also, like, especially related to pregnancy, there is, I mean, there is a procedure for everything that happens to, you know, there from tummy tucks to boob drops to, you know, to vaginal rejuvenation. But this obsession with this notion of, like, stasis, that the idea is this, you know, creating this absolutely false illusion that nothing happened to your body.
Is it
insane? That it did not, you know, gestate a child and feed it this entire time. That is exactly the same as it was before. And that's really bonkers to me. And then there does seem to be, like you say, you know, a groundswell of people rejecting that notion. And I think that, you know, for all of its, you know, ills, like with social media, a lot of those communities, I feel like, have been building from that area. There are several hashtags like postpartum, like reclamation narratives, but, you know, the kind of the largest one was like Take Back Postpartum, which was just like, and it was as simple as a lot of women who had just had children posting pictures of their stomachs.
Yeah,
this is what it looks like. Like, this is what this looks like without a tummy tuck. Like,
But also, so much of the conversation around becoming pregnant and so much of the fear around how your body is, how you're going to change is physical. What is my body going to look like? What is my body going to feel like? Am I ever going to get my body back? Probably if you work hard enough and you work out and you eat right, everything will come back to resemble what it was before. But the thing that gets ignored is the mental health. Everyone thinks that you're going to have a baby and then maybe you'll be depressed and then you'll take pills and then you'll be fine. Or you'll just be fine. You'll have blues for a couple of weeks. But the emotional impact of having a child is like nothing I've ever experienced. And I'm sure you can talk about it because you're talking about how you had to work out for your mental health.
Yeah. Well, for me, it started so early on, like realizing how unsupported the process of becoming a mother is in our culture. Like starting with like the baby shower, right? Like the notion of a baby shower like makes me want to break out into hives, you know. The idea of like fucking cupcakes and poopy diapers on the donkey or whatever the fuck. I'm like, I am literally dying.
Right.
Like my entire life that I've known it is going to be gone.
Yeah.
And I'm going to become something new. And of course there's light and beauty and joy in that, but there's also like something to be more.
Sure, funerals.
But you know, it was one of the most empowering things I've ever done for myself is I asked for what I needed in that moment. And I remember thinking like a baby shower will make me feel horrible. I will feel empty. I will feel unseen. I will feel unsupported. And what I actually need right now is the women in my life who know me, who have seen me through the changes in my life, who make me feel loved and supported and strong to witness how terrified I am, scared and of the unknown I am, and I realized I didn't have a place where I could do that because I didn't know I could ask for it. And I reached out to like four women in my life, all like mother figures to me. Mm-hmm. Not all biological mothers in their life, but have mothered me in one way or another, saying, you have mothered me. And so as I become a mother, like, I need you all to create some sort of ritual to usher me into being a mom. Yeah. And it's like, you think about even like cultures today, or just how ingrained in our history, like, ritual and marking things and saying like this transformational thing is happening, and just the act of saying it is happening, like it's been watered down to like balloons and cupcakes and poopy diaper games. I'm like, I feel like that is part of what is so scary and isolating and depressing about becoming a mother, is that the culture at large doesn't acknowledge what's actually happening.
Absolutely.
And so I think from the get-go of being present, of being pregnant, I realized if I am going to get what I need, I have to ask for it, because it's not just going to show up in these ways in our culture.
Honestly, it's incredible that you knew well enough, because I was happy to go through the pieces. I was just like, I'll do it. I'll have a baby shower. And it wasn't until the baby was born that I was like, oh, what about me? Wait. The baby's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I was just hit by a train.
Yeah.
And now I don't know what to do, because I have not thought about it for 1 second.
Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah.
And then where do we leave women, right? Yeah. We leave women with no parental leave, no partner, because partner's got to go back to work. You know,
and no community.
Often a giant hospital bill, no one to help take care of you. Everyone lives far away from their families. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's like presents for the baby. Great.
Right.
And then what?
Right. Right.
And there is something too, like, you know, these rituals that we do, go through, as you say, is like performing the steps. And, you know, I'm someone who recently got married, and, you know, part of the entire wedding culture is, you know, just like, do the steps, do all these things that you're supposed to do. And there is,
it connects us, or something,
but again, it's just like, you're just supporting industries. Mm. That's what it is. But actually kind of until you're actually in a position to be able to make the thing your own and to actually ask for the things that you need, that it stops these things from just being purely performative and actually being, you know, something that helps you in your transition from one place to the next.
Totally.
And it is, you know, I do think ritual is important, and it absolutely is. And I think it's a very helpful thing to kind of, you know, outwardly acknowledge that, you know, this change is happening. This is something that we are doing. And, you know, and to also kind of make a statement as well can be very helpful to your community at large. But again, it is, yeah, the cupcakes aren't going to help you when
it just further depresses you because you're like, this was supposed to make me feel good.
Yeah.
Like, it's not. So what's wrong with me that I don't feel like, you know, supported and ready? Yeah. Like, I didn't realize how afraid I was of the actual physical act of giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just ignored it for a good 7 months. And then I remember I like finally went to my first prenatal yoga class, of which I only went to like two my whole pregnancy. But I went to one, and it was this amazing yoga teacher who was a doula. Her name is Rebecca Beninati. And it wasn't yoga like, keep your arms toned while you're pregnant. Mm. It was like yoga, like she made us breathe the way we would have to breathe in birth. Mm. And it was the first time that I even let myself imagine that a baby was going to come out of my body. And as I was breathing the way she told us to, I just started sobbing.
Yeah.
Because I'd been pregnant for 7 months and hadn't thought like, oh, I have to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I am, in general, like a person who like talks a lot and reflects a lot and goes to therapy. And like, I know that like with all the privilege and the access and the resources that I have, like if that doesn't feel accessible to me, like who has it, you know? And I'm sure there are cultures all around the world, and it has nothing to do with money, who do have embedded in their culture, like that ritual, that passage of like support and community where there is an acknowledgement of what actually is happening to the person, to the spirit.
I
mean, my mother has always told me that after a child is born in India, then you don't get out of bed for 40 days.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe it. I was like, well, then, you know, because I have this very sort of Western idea, because I was raised mostly here, of like, no, you have a kid, and then you take, if you're lucky, you take 3 months of maternity leave, and then you go back, and everything's, I was operating from this very like logistical place. Mm-hmm. And my mother and every woman around me who had been through childbirth looked at me with their kind of like sad faces and were like, oh no, you don't know what's about to happen and you need to take the time and it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. You do not have to go back at 3 months. You have to go back when you're ready and all these things and let me take care of you. And that was the hardest thing for me to accept. Let me take care of you was so hard for me. Mm-hmm. I did not do it the first time and I lost my mind, mm-hmm. fully lost my mind, went into a crazy depression mm-hmm. because I couldn't accept that I couldn't be exactly who I was before mm-hmm. With a baby in my life and with like, my body still knitting itself back together. The second time I was like, here you go. I am staying in bed for 6 weeks. See you later. And guess what? My recovery was so much easier. Mm. I don't think I could walk with the first baby until almost, you know, probably 4 months in.
Wow.
And with second baby, I was up and picking up my son at school the third week.
But you took the time to
because
recover.
I took the time. I took the time to lie down and be like, my dad had this very simple thing where he said, your body repairs while you're resting. It cannot repair while you're up and about living your mm-hmm. life. And he said, this is a false narrative here that you're supposed to all of a sudden bounce back to what you mm-hmm. were. Like you have to pay respect to the fact that you've done this incredible thing.
And also I feel like once I had him and then was back in my life and did have, I had 10 weeks to be with him, which is still not like
that's shocking
a lot, no, but like to me, it, that was like to yeah. most people, that's yeah.
a to ton a British of person,
well, in a yeah. British city,
yeah.
like, a year,
yeah, absolutely, right? Exactly. I just met a gal at a yeah. wedding who's German, and she was like, yeah, I got 6 months off, but I couldn't stand it, I had to go back. I'm like, oh my gosh,
you had
like,
a choice, you know? A choice.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, it was too much, I had to go back to work. Mm-hmm. I was like, if only yeah. women had that option, but I realized when I was back, it was like. Back in my life and work and doing all the things, I was like, oh my gosh, why would anybody, like the fact that the goal would be to go backwards mm-hmm. when becoming a mother, this thing that my body mm-hmm. did, this thing that my brain has chemically changed, mm-hmm. like I am so much more and so much more expansive and capable. Mm-hmm. Like I could see kind of the greatness of me
mm-hmm. yeah.
that I couldn't see before. And this notion of like, just get back to what you mm-hmm. were limits you from yeah. seeing like, we're bigger than superheroes. Like
yeah.
when, and it's, and it, I just think that it's so toxic, this notion of like, get back to where you were instead of becoming the new thing that is more than you were.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something as well I would love to like talk, like how did you, like you're talking about this kind of prenatal yoga class and the first time you actually kind of had really considered the notion that you were going to have to extract a child from your body. how did you process that and come to terms with that? I yeah. do, like, you know, and for me, I have an enormous amount of anxiety about the notion of childbirth, especially in this country yeah. as a woman of color, that the yes. chances of me dying during childbirth yeah. are much higher.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you also like had a bad experience, like when, mm-hmm. you know,
yes.
I'm struggling still talking about it, actually.
Yes, yes. I forget that it happened. After yeah. my second baby, I was hospitalized on day 5. With a crazy, crazy high blood pressure and could have had an aneurysm if I hadn't checked myself into the ER, like literally at that moment.
Wow.
So I nearly died a week after I had my second baby and I still forget. And so when people go, how was the delivery and how was the birth? I go, it was great. It was so easy. And someone will remind me and I'm like, oh, right. I was in the hospital for 4 days, 5 days after having her.
Wow.
But I don't, it's, yeah, it was traumatic. Traumatic enough to block out.
100%. I mean, again, because how would you survive if you didn't
yeah.
block it? But, you know, kind of getting yourself to a place where you were able to give birth, like, you know, yeah. were, you know, how, you know, was it the yoga that helped? Was yeah. there anything else? Was it your kind of, you know, your larger group of, you know, close mm-hmm. friends? Or did you just take a bunch of drugs and just like, forget about it?
I think it was a couple things. I mean, obviously everybody's experience is different, and there are real things that can happen in childbirth, and it's not irrational. It's a serious thing that's happening. But I think I was a little bit just like angry about how disempowered like the culture wants me to be about my body and about childbirth, and how fear is just sort of the message. And I worked with a doula here and there, and mostly just cried because it was just like wrapping my mind around like, this is going to happen.
It's terrifying.
And I didn't read any books like beginning to end, but I skimmed through a lot of books. And one of the books that was really helpful to me was Ina May's Guide to Childbirth. You know, this one. And it was talking a lot about what the effect of fear on the body, you know, and when you're in childbirth, like so much of the brain body connection and the fears that are coming up. And so, you know, that helped. And I also like did some hypnobirthing classes. I was sort of like, I'm going to put everything in my toolbox. Yeah. I was like, I'm just going to put all the tools in the box and hope when I'm there,
one like, of them will work.
I'll be able to like figure out what I need when I need it. And I was really, really, really fortunate. I did get induced. And so I got induced with Pitocin. And so kind of went from like 0 to 100 and did end up getting an epidural. And, but even that was like, I mean, my husband and I just kept looking at each other and like cracking up because remember being like, this is the most intense shit. Like it is so intense. So and intense. Even when it goes well, or even when it's easy, whatever the fuck that means, like it's so intense. Yeah. And because of the physical reality, but also because of the emotional mental reality of like, you're feeling things you've never felt before and your body's doing something it's never done before. And, you know, real stuff comes up in there. And so I meditated while I was in labor. I remember like I started pushing and I was like, no, I'm not ready. I'm terrified. Like I was actually like shaking. And I told the doctor, I'm like, I'm not ready. And I was told my husband, I was like, I need time. Like I need to get my mind right. And I like he put on this audio meditation and I had to breathe for 45 minutes just to get my body to stop shaking. So I felt like I could focus enough to push. Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't know what I was going to need. I had no idea what it was going to be like. So I just tried to put all the tools that I could find, like, in my toolbox.
That's really smart advice. I think that a lot of women are very early put into two camps. And that's like, there's like a woo-woo and there's like a give me the drugs, right?
Yeah.
And there's so much in between.
So much.
It does not hurt to have the information.
No.
The first time I believe my approach was, well, the baby's coming out. I don't know. Like, I just leave me alone. I'll just get there. I'll go to the hospital. They will get the baby out of me. And my recovery was really hard. And the second time I did a little bit of hypnobirthing and that helped me immensely because it got me to a point where I could then get an epidural a little later, where I didn't have as much damage and where my recovery was faster. But like all of this information, and I shook as well, and I meditated as well. And all those things are things that help you get through in a way that make you feel less afraid. Because otherwise you're like, what is happening to my body? One of 100 things can happen. And if you're ready for it in any way and you know how to manage it in any way, I think that's the power. Like, and a lot of us don't have that. And a lot of women don't feel that.
And another like thing, like the ritual baby shower that I asked my dearest to like hold for me, they made me like a birthing necklace that they beaded, like they made it in front of me, and they each like strung a bead and talked about like what I was, the qualities that I would need during the childbirth that already existed in me. And I wore my birthing beads the whole time, and I like, and it's like crazy, but I had those beads, and when I needed it, like they were there. And then there was another moment where I was like, fuck these beads, give me the epidural. Like, you know, but it was all there for me when
when you actually needed it.
And that's the thing. It's like, I didn't know what I was going to need. It's like, why limit what's there for
Absolutely.
You if you are privileged enough to be able to, you know, a lot of people have zero access to the kinds of support and information that a lot of us get to have.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Something that you kind of, you know, that strikes me as so unique about the things that you're talking about and the way that you kind of experience your birth is the flexibility. Because there is, I mean, often when I talk to friends who have given birth, that it is, have the idea of a birthing plan.
Which you can have one. Yeah. If it makes you feel better, like you should, by all means, make a plan.
Yeah. But, and then feeling like feeling an innate sense of failure when that plan does does not materialize in the same way. But you know, in the way that you experienced, and took leadership of your. Well, not even leadership, but basically being flexible enough to take what you wanted when you needed it.
Yeah. And I wanted to go into labor on my own, but my doctor was recommending induction based on like a couple things. And, you know, I was put in this position where it was like, you know, do I stick to the thing that I genuinely want and think I'm capable of, like waiting this out and doing it? You know, the moments of like this fucking medical industry, and they just like want to make more money. And
I saw the Ricky Lake documentary.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, and I did. I was so upset about it. I was like, "This is me getting trapped in this thing." Like, I've had this wonderful, healthy pregnancy. Like, why all of a sudden is this a problem? Yeah. I was so upset about it. But then I was put in this position to like what go against what my medical professional was telling me. Like, God forbid, right? So. I, at the end of the day, had to be like, this is what they mean when they say, like, have your plan and let go. And so I did get induced, and I remember having to go into it. I had to get my mind right. I had to be like, this isn't what you wanted. This isn't how you imagined it, but this is what's happening. Yeah. And, like, you cannot go into this, like, upset, angry, distrusting of this person. Like, this is what's happening, and there has to be an acceptance of it that isn't going to ultimately like make this a terrible experience. And so there definitely was that like letting go. Cause I thought I didn't have a plan, but then when it came down to it,
I was like,
I really wanted it to happen.
You have this vision of what you think it's going to be. And also it's your first lesson, I think, in, it's your first reminder that you're bringing a person into the world, and that person is going to come in however he or she wants.
Yeah.
And that person is going to live his or her life however he or she wants.
Right.
And that is your first reminder that you cannot control them.
Right.
Like, you are there to coach and encourage them and like enrich them and support them and do whatever you need to do to make them like, you know, vibrant human beings who give back. But they are coming however they're going to come. Yeah. Like, both my times, I had ideas of how my births were going to be, and both my times in the middle of the afternoon my water broke, and so there you go. They were both like busting to get out, and those are the kind of kids they are, and like, that's just, you know, they're still like that. They're just like, let me out. Like, let me out. They're happiest outside. They are who they are, and it's like one moment in the beginning of their lives, and it is the beginning of the letting go, because you do think that you can control and shape a person, and you cannot. You can't. They are who they are. So then after the baby, now you've started working out, and did you ever feel any panic? Because I felt a certain panic of like, I'm never going to get my life back. It's just never going to happen.
There's certainly that feeling in the beginning where like, especially when it's for the first time, when something feels a certain way, you're like, this is how it's always going to
forever.
Feel.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always going to like only get away to take a shower, and I'm going to be taking a shower and feeling guilty because I'm so psyched to not be with my baby right now. But and I feel terrible about it, and I'm not enjoying this, you know, like there's that feeling of like, it's always going to feel this way. And you know, I'm incredibly fortunate. I have a job I love. I'm very supported and surrounded, and super resourced. And so I get to do the things that make me me. I'm very, very, very fortunate, in that sense. I feel like because I did do a lot of thinking before, like before mm-hmm. we brought the baby in, and I made my husband too, like that ritual I was talking about, like my husband was a part of that. Like yeah. mm-hmm. I'm not just becoming a mother, you're becoming a father. And our relationship is dying the way that it was yeah. and is going to yeah. be something like, new. And yeah. I think we thought a lot about what was ending mm-hmm. and making room for something new to come through. So I think that anytime that those fears would pop up of like, this is how it's going to be forever, or I'm always going to feel this way, I would remember that something new was constellating, and that I had to just kind of allow for the new thing to mm-hmm. to take shape. And that I think just in the 15 months that I've been a mommy to this little nugget, mm-hmm. Realizing that like everything is just for now. Like,
yeah.
Like this little thing he does that I love is just mm-hmm. for now. This mm-hmm. little thing he does that I hate is just for now. And mm-hmm. like a day goes by and he's a different thing. And now he doesn't do that cute thing he did. He does this thing. And yeah. I feel like I try to remember that. And I think the thing I'm struggling with is how I feel about like my place in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like before it's like, okay, this is my career and yeah. these are my drives and mm-hmm. this is my mission. And I feel very clear about that. Mm-hmm. And like a kid is going to come in and be like one of the many things that I care yeah. about. Mm-hmm. But my experience mm-hmm. is that I'm like, why do I ever have to care about mm-hmm. anything ever mm-hmm. again? Yes. Like I do yeah. want to just like,
yep.
and not that that's all I want, but I'm sitting here going like, when is that impulse to like be out in the world going to come back? Or when is that creative? And it's yes. come in like fits and starts of like, yeah. oh yeah, I remember that feeling of yeah. creative passion, or I remember that like ambitious person that mm-hmm. I used to be, but it's still very, deconstructed.
Yes.
And like trying to find its way back to like, what are my new goals and missions and like my outer person in the world going to look like now that like something has fundamentally shifted in me where I see like one of my purposes in life being to like raise an exceptional human being and yeah. put him into the world. And I don't know the answer. I'm just trying to
yeah.
answer that, but also, you know, how making the world that they inhabit a palatable mm-hmm. place
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is obviously a more overwhelming mission, but the sense of responsibility that comes with that, just like I have willingly produced a new person and put them into this environment, how do mm. I make that not suck for them?
Yeah, yeah.
And that is
which yeah. is like you think is and maybe ultimately it will be the thing that like where it ends up, that feeling of like I have to make the world a good place for the people I love to be in it. At the moment it is that like thing of like, oh, our survival as a species is possible because of a mother's deep instinct to keep her child alive at yes. all costs, mm-hmm. which also is like keeping yourself alive. Mm-hmm. So, and keeping yourself like capable to mm-hmm. them. And like, there are so many things out in the world that I have been and that I have done that at the moment, like I just say no to because I do always think of like, how does that impact this little one?
Yeah.
And it's not like popular to say that because I should care about everyone's children the way I care about my child. But mm-hmm. for the time being, like there is a deep instinct and drive to say like, I need my deepest instinct is driving me to make sure this child has yeah. what it needs. And that is a big identity shift for
yeah.
me. And trying to be okay with that and not feel terrible about that and say it may shift and most likely will shift yeah. and turn out again at another point. But yeah. letting myself...
I think there's a deep, deep biological thing that happens when you have the child, which is the attachment. It's like a ghost limb. It's like your child is now a limb. So who was it that said like having a kid is like wearing your heart outside of your body? Like yeah. you have a part of your body and you're going to treat it like he's a part of your body, your favorite part of your body, you know? And the attachment that is there, the desire to feel close and take care of him and take care of only him, and he is the center of your universe and everything else can be like reassembled around him.
Mm.
That is a process.
Yeah.
And it's a process that takes years.
Yeah.
you know, I don't think I was ready to step outside and have a little bit more perspective probably till my son was two, to look around and be like, and what's going on in the world?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly. Fine because you have to. Like,
yeah.
We each take, you know, we each try to make our immediate environments better. We can't, like, all go, like, run the UN. Yeah. We can't all, like, be, you know, fix Brexit. We can't, you know, we can't all do that. But what you can do right now is, like, provide a foundation for this child, you know, like, raise him into, like, into the world. And all this stuff, it definitely puts everything in very clear focus. Everything else in your life, all the priorities, all the things you're being asked to do, the way you spend your time. All the women I know who have had children, who are all working moms generally, have come together probably, you know, again, 1.5 to 2 years later, and they all say better and stronger, you know? Like, you get better at the work, you focus on what you really want to do, you spend so little time doing things that you don't want to do, which is wonderful. And you haven't built an excuse because you can be like, I gotta be back there, which is like a miracle. Like, you never have to go to any event ever again because you're like, babysitter, and they're like, what babysitter leaves at 9? You're like, she's very fussy.
This is how I know that Pri really wanted to come to my wedding.
It's true. I went to England for her wedding. We dropped our kids off in New York. Yes, exactly. And it's all like, it's better. It's just better, like you said. And there is the kind of anxiety of like, but what is my place in the world? That will all come. There was a woman, I went to a yoga class, we're all just talking about like inspiring yoga classes. I went to one yoga class after I had a baby. And this woman who had 4 kids, who was like glowing with health and happiness, was just like, you just had a baby? And I said, yeah. She was like, can I just be patient and be kind? And I was like, okay. That like changed everything.
It does, yeah.
Because she was like, what's the rush?
Yeah.
Like, you're in some rush because that was the pace of your life before. Sure. That's not how this works.
Yeah. And I think for those of us who are used to like wanting and to meet a lot of people's needs and who have big responsibilities in the world and feel responsible to other people, to other communities, to be representative, to like, there's a feeling of like, of responsibility there and obligation, and how hard it is for us and, you know, bringing this back to topic of like, as a woman of color, like how in our communities, like, we often are holding up so much that it's really hard work to deem yourself and your own transformation like worthy of that time and space, and say like, oh, but I'm letting these people down. I'm letting these people down. I'm letting these people down. It's like being able to say for yourself, we as women, and particularly as women of color who hold spaces of taking care of so much, we have to, as a radical act, like, be willing to grant that to ourselves.
Also, you cannot provide that service if you do not take care of yourself. You have to take care of your child. You have to take care of yourself. And there is like a thing that you hear over and over again, for example, during like awards speeches where like people talk about their wives and how selfless they are. I want to poke my eyes out because nobody wants to be selfless. Nobody wants to be selfless. We've all been programmed and brainwashed in weird ways. My mother was a sacrificer. She would do anything for us, you know, and I love her to death. She was a great mom. But I look at her and I go, I wish you had taken some time for yourself. You know, like, I wish, and that's my, that's something that I have to reprogram myself. I have not worked out in, a year and a half. I have not gotten, you know, like, nothing. I've done nothing for myself. And now it's time. Like, now I feel comfortable. And that's what it's about. Like, there's the guilt and there's a comfort level. And it's like, when are you ready? And when you're ready, like, take a step back, get a sitter, leave them with the other parent, and just go get whatever it is you need to do. I need idle alone time. That's what I need. I never get it. I, in the last probably 6 months, have been home alone for approximately 2 hours.
And this is hard. This is the horror stories.
Making me insane. It's making me insane. And like, you know, like, my husband's moving into an office. Great. Back to school. Great. Like, we were almost there. I can see it like around the corner. And whatever you need to do to take care of yourself, you are of no use to other people unless you come first.
Yeah.
And that's something that I hope everyone can learn.
Wow. What a ride.
It's just all so hard. It's so wonderful and it's so hard. It's actually like that. It's impossible to explain to, I don't know.
But also, I think that, like, for me, I feel like it's been the catalyst I've needed to take care of myself.
Yes.
Like, I've never been good at taking care of myself. Before mm-hmm. I got pregnant, I was mm-hmm. burnt out and doing too much mm-hmm. and saying yes to everything and trying to show up for everyone and mm-hmm. everything. And it wasn't until I got pregnant that I was like, oh, no. Like, one. I get to say yeah. no. Yeah. And like, while this is hard and uncomfortable to try and find this new space and this new identity, it's absolutely what I needed yeah. to learn to say, like, I can come first. And, yeah. and actually, I have to come first. Yeah.
And even though it's an uncomfortable feeling, you have to take care of yourself. I love that because how often do you get to the end of a week and just think that was all output? Uh-huh. Like my entire week was like a one-way street of outpouring of energy. And like, what have I, and I have a partner who loves me and I have kids who love me, yeah. but like what? Am I sitting around waiting for other people to like what like knead my feet and like spray me with Evian? Like yeah, what am I waiting yeah. for?
Yes,
like,
I'm always waiting.
I gotta go. I gotta go make that time, and it's yeah. why I tease Camilla for it, but I also love it, and I hope she maintains this if she decides to have children. After she has children, Camilla's bathing regimen is like every week is a new bath oil. Every week is like an outdoor bathtub, and this week it's and I'm like keep that.
Yeah.
Keep that. Remember your essence.
Which is like, luxury body oils. My actual yeah. essence is luxury body
Maintain
oils.
Maintain it. Do not let that go anywhere. Hold on to it. It will like save your soul.
Agree.
Honestly, I might just invent a fake child just to have more time to have baths to say no to
Take
going
the
out
child.
Things.
I have a bath it's moment.
All right. Should we move on to beauty of the week?
Yes.
So our beauty of the week is someone, literally anyone who you find particularly beautiful. It could be, you know, someone in the public eye. It could be for an act. It could also just be someone who's really hot. sometimes Pri's beauty of the week is her daughter.
It's always like every other week. I'm like, can I talk about her yet again? She's so cute.
And I say mine for this week is because Pri was lamenting the lack of Indian athletes. And
yeah, we have genetically low muscle tone.
That's. Which doesn't really matter for cricket.
We're math. Maths. We like build rockets and we save people's lives. Right. Thank you.
But, however, so I don't know if you saw this video this week, but there were basically these two, God, I want to say they're like 12 years old, these two Indian kids who were from, I think, in West Bengal. Uh-huh. And they basically, this video of them walking like the 2 kilometers home from school, and they just launched into cartwheels and somersaults. And at first you're like, oh, these are cute kids just doing cartwheels. And then one of them does this enormous like double backflip and you're like, oh, oh my God. So these two young children, so Jashika Khan, who is 11, and Muhammad Azizuddin, who is 12. So this video went super viral. It was filmed by the teacher. And so now they are the Indian sports minister.
Now they're YouTube stars.
Well, actually, no, the Indian sports minister saw this video and now they're now trainees at the sports academy.
Oh my
so
God.
So they will probably be competing in the Olympics.
That's incredible.
But you have to watch this video.
I yelled out loud
as I saw it. And these two kids were literally just like practicing in their tiny school. They had their only gymnastics equipment was one tire.
wow.
And it's breathtaking. But basically, I'm ready for Indian Simone Biles. So
yeah.
Let's do it.
God, we need to branch out, don't we? My beauty of the week was a lovely surprise that I got in the mail. I wrote this essay for the New York Times a few weeks ago for the parenting section about an Indian holiday called Raksha Bandhan, which mm-hmm. is about like brother sister love.
It's very beautiful. Maria, please put it in the show notes.
Someone put it in the show notes.
I do the show notes. I love how you're always like,
I don't know.
You're always like delegating to me.
Pre self-promote. Please put your New York.
Yeah. I will link to the, or I wrote about my close bond with my brother and how I'm trying to like force a recreation of that with my own children. And I think a part of it was my parents were not religious, but every year was like Raksha Bandhan was very serious. It happened in August and we exchanged gifts. We would just talk about how much we love each other and it was just a Aww. Thing. And we still do it and my kids do it now. And so I had written this thing for the New York Times and then a woman contacted me and was like,
I work for this publisher, which I wanted to mention, called Beach Lane Books. It's a children's publisher, and they do these amazing, they do a bunch of books. They do a bunch of books, which I love. But they do a line of books by Indian authors about like Indian holidays. So they had a Raksha Bandhan book called Thread of Love, which I got and I loved. And I read to the kids, and Dylan, you could tell. It's so funny because he loves books. And I was like ashamed of myself for not that often reading him books about this big part of his culture. And I was like, let me get all of them. There's like a Diwali book. There's a book about like an auto rickshaw, elephants, snake charmers, whatever. Just give me like all of it. Like, give me all of it.
I will come over and hang out with him and watch Baba at any time.
I know. So I love their little press, and I ordered some more books, and I just wanted to recommend Beach Lane Books for people who are looking for, you know, Indian listeners and just like people of any ethnicity, because it seems like they have a lot of like stuff from writers of color, which you don't often get.
I love that.
Yeah. 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 Did you have someone you wanted to recommend?
I do. You actually mentioned her earlier. Oh my God. Tracy Ellis Ross. And Pattern, which I'm so, well, you can see I have very curly hair.
Girls.
My hair texture has changed a lot
really?
Throughout my life. Yeah. And when I was pregnant, it changed a lot. And, but I have curly hair. Yeah. And my whole life and career, like, has just been about, like, beating my hair into submission, blow drying, ironing, whatever. Yeah. And because it's such a big part of, like, work. In my day life, like, I never do anything with it. Mm-hmm. And I've never properly learned how to, like, wear curls.
Yeah.
So
which is shocking because I'm looking at your curls right now and they beautiful. Look resplendent.
Really?
We do spend an unusual amount of time talking about curly hair on the show. It's not that unusual because we have a lot of women of color being but like,
I feel so ashamed. I'm like, I'm 35 years old. I should have learned how to like wear my curls by now, but I haven't. And I'm hopeful that Tracy's, meanwhile, I just love her. She's one of the most joyful, like, warriors I know, and she's just like so authentic to herself. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, I would buy anything Tracy Ellis Ross wanted to sell me.
I'm ready to join a cult. I'm ready.
I'm eagerly awaiting my Pattern product so I can test it. I'm really excited.
So excited. It is crazy to me that like she has come out with this product and everyone I know is like pre-order. Like when refresh. Like when is it getting here?
And because again, she has the greatest curls in the world.
Yeah.
It's just back.
Well, Camilla had mentioned something, which was what did you say? It's about enhancing and not taming.
Well, yeah, taming, but it's just so much of kind of women of hair care, like women of color hair care, is about like submission. And like you say, like straighten, blow dry, keratin treatment.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it seems so much of the campaign is just like, embrace it. This is what your hair looks like. We're just going to make it,
isn't it beautiful?
It's best version
it's
of
the
itself.
Best. Yeah. I mean, I was raised to believe that like my hair was not presentable. Yeah. Like me as I am was like a disgrace. Like you can't go out like that. You can't, you know. Something that's like telling me, you know, embrace the natural you and that's beautiful and like it's beautiful on Tracy, so maybe it's beautiful
on
me.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Isn't it incredible how it can take like 30 years to undo that wiring of like one throwaway, like your hair?
You know, like, well, it wasn't one throwaway in my life. I mean. It was like so many comments, but totally. I mean, you know, and which we didn't even get to like body stuff, but it's like I love the, everything that's kind of popping up in our culture right now that is about like, you know, I don't want to say the cliche of like different standards of beauty because also like, and I know this is a weird and controversial thing to say about like health and beauty and wellness, but like I kind of am at this place in my life where I'm like, fuck beautiful. Like beautiful isn't really that interesting anymore. And like, yes, beautiful can mean a lot of things, but like, and then what? Like, can we get like, to me, it's like, when can beautiful be like a thing that is a part of us, but like not our goals in life so that we can get past it and like start being all the other interesting things there are to be in life.
It's also just like, you know, beauty, like being beautiful, quote unquote beautiful, is so easily obtainable if you have enough money.
Yeah.
That there is actually there's a lesser value to it. It's just like, look, if you hire all the right surgeons, if you do the right spray tans, do the right, like, you know, like hairdressers, everyone like can look exactly
you
the
look
same
crazy.
Like an Instagram influencer. But again, it's the what is underneath that. That's the thing that's actually valuable. And
the why.
Yeah.
Well, and it's what's missing in like our whole culture.
Well, like I think that's why we so wanted to talk about this, because we both grew up in predominantly white schools and white, you know, neighborhoods, and are that we were told over and over again that we were not the standard for sure. Yet we feel pretty good about ourselves for other reasons, whether it was our intelligence or our personalities or our relationships with our families, whatever it is. And that stuff is being celebrated so much more as people turn their backs on this one standard, which was very like 80s supermodel Cindy God bless her, she's a beauty. But like there was a very 80s standard that we were all raised with. And that's just not that's not what the world looks like. Yeah. That's not what the country looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like guys get to be ugly. Like and like you most know, like them. Why like okay, what if I like, what if I am ugly? Don't I still, like, have value to put into the world? You know, like...
Yeah, also, guys get to be ugly and still be fuckable.
Yeah, like, yeah. And so, successful like, and rich.
Right.
And
but he's rich and or driver he's funny.
Is ugly.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's and horrible. Yet...
I know. Like, very fuckable.
Which is, like
his proportions are
we should be, like, allowed to be ugly.
Yeah. I mean, you had a whole show about it.
I did have a show. I mean, it wasn't about...
a giant hit show called Ugly Betty.
Yes, which I always thought was, like, she never was ugly.
Exactly.
No.
That was also the thing.
She was
so
never ugly.
You are also very, very pretty. And so watching again, like this disjoint over just like ugly, I was like, she's hot, but there are braces. What am I?
Well, for me, it was always like ugly was what people called her. Exactly. It wasn't what like, she ever saw in herself. No, but again, course. Like, it's a good question. Like, what if she was, what if it was just genuinely like not an attractive person? Yeah. Like, is there still value in a female human being who isn't
absolutely.
Beautiful?
But I think even more than that, I think what I am really enjoying is everyone going, what is attractive?
Yeah.
I find this person attractive. I find that person attractive. I find this, you know, this kind of whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's changing so much. And I feel like I love kids. I love kids. I love young people. They're better than us. Yeah. Like they just are. And to see like gender fluidity, to see like people not labeled the same way they were when we were, it's still happening. There's of course bullying and cliques and all that stuff. But when you talk to young people, in cities and suburban areas where they go, oh, we don't say that anymore. What are what are jocks? Yeah. What are this? What are that? And you go, oh, this is like a better, more fluid world. And I think we're all going to be better for it.
Okay. Should we do Rosebud and Thorn?
Rosebud and Thorn. So Rosebud and Thorn is a game that we play with our son to get him to talk to us at the end of the day. And it's like highlight, low light, and like what you're looking forward to tomorrow. So we do a beauty version, a beauty wellness health arena version of your highlight, your low light, and what you're looking, something you're looking forward to trying. Mine's off on vacation. I'm like, it's vacation. I'm planning a vacation. So your beauty rose.
It's well, actually, mine was vacation related. So I was on vacation last week, and so I did the sweat lodge ceremony, which was
by yourself.
Well, I was with like 12 strangers. So I was in community, but I was like, you know, I did not know anyone there. So it was a practice of ancient medicine that was led by 3 indigenous men, 2 indigenous to the area that I was in. And it was a 3-hour ritual. I tapped out at hour 2 because I was about to vomit and like pass out. So the ritual kind of basically is centered around being in a sweat lodge, which is heated by a ceremonial fire. And then you basically go into the sweat lodge, which is constructed out of like twigs and then covered with like cowhide and then like woven blankets. And you basically sit in the dark. There's a lot of drumming and chanting and repetition and song. And it's basically about sweating and pushing out discomfort and kind of like riding through your discomfort. And there are points at which you basically go a bit mad. You'll definitely hallucinate and see some stuff. You'll want to leave a lot. And so much of the ritual.
As a matter of fact.
Was it a temescal?
Yeah.
It was a temescal, yeah.
And it was a complete whim. It was basically the place that I was staying. It was one of the few, I stay at this hotel quite a lot because of the amount of respect they have for the area that they are in and their connection with the people that whose land that they are on. Mm-hmm. And so one of the women who worked there was like, you should just come and do it. Just come and like, and you know, be part of this thing. And
there were points at which it was so uncomfortable that I, you know, I desperately wanted to leave. And one of the men who was leading the ceremony was like, this is part of the process, like push through it as much as you can. This is actually part of it. And it was, I mean, it was incredible. I can't remember the last time I'd pushed through discomfort in that way and what it connected me to and connecting me to the earth that I was sitting on and the experiences within my body. And I think that so much of your existence is about denying experience and denying discomfort. And yeah, it was a really, really great ceremony. I had to stop at hour two because I was starting to vomit and I didn't want to vomit on the other 12 people who were there. I thought that would be rude.
So British.
But... but it was just very, very interesting. It was, yeah, it was a really, really great experience. So that was my...
It's one. Funny because you described the whole thing and then I forgot it was like your highlight. It was like, yeah. Oh, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, blah, 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 blah. I got lost for a second there. Right. So you enjoyed it.
It was great. And I also just felt like incredibly reflective afterwards in a way that I had not for some time. And it also... You know, there was also like the science part of the brain. I was just like, this is why they do this at Scientology.
Right.
Make you feel empty to kind of brainwash you with all of the alien stuff. But it's definitely not as calculated than that. I basically, if you get the opportunity to do so, I would highly recommend it.
My roast for the week was I meditate. I practice TM. And I had fallen out of practice. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes don't...
What is TM?
Transcendental meditation. Cool. I meditate twice a day for 20 minutes for in the morning and in the evening. It's how I maintain my sanity. It's good for my... I was a skeptic for a long time and then Rodney made me go when I was super anxious during my pregnancy. And I found that it just boosted my like brain chemicals in a really nice way. And it's like an antidepressant for me. It just keeps me afloat the way a lot of people talk about exercise, which I'm thinking about starting. Soon.
Considering
thinking about exercising soon. But meditation is like sitting in one place and like closing your eyes and it's awesome. You should try it. But I often don't know until I like am feeling terrible that like I've fallen out for, you know, I had fallen out and I'm like, it'll be fine. I'll be fine. I can skip a couple days. I'm just so busy. I got to do this and this and this. And then I like lost it. I had a crazy week. I like burst into tears about stupid things. And I was like, oh, what do I do? And I was like, I gotta meditate. And it was just a reminder that when I'm feeling overwhelmed and I think I gotta do all these things, I will not get them done if I don't sit down for 20 minutes and meditate. Mm. It won't. I will just feel the overwhelm and the overwhelm will inhibit my ability to do the things that I want to do. So I did it all week. I'm feeling great. Going to continue to do it. And that was my roast. Mm. How about you?
This is having to do with health and wellness, sure. Just something that was.
Something that made you feel good.
I have been working out recently. I haven't worked out with a personal trainer in like years because I was just in a good groove. But since I had the baby, I was like, I need something to hold me accountable. So I've been going, which I said before, is like more than anything saying like, this is the thing I'm doing for me today is, and then doing it is like huge. And I it's very hard for me to like work my glutes. Like, I feel like I cannot access them. Like I'm like,
I feel the same way.
Maybe like, I just have a body where like those don't work on me. I don't know.
I know
like,
what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. Like
I'm broken
they don't,
in that way.
I'm trying to speak to them and they're not
listening. They're just not.
The exact opposite thing. I feel like it's the one part of my body that is response. Overworked and just like, man. It's always the first thing. I mean, that I was just like, hi, I'm here. I'm like, all right.
Okay. That just is like amazing. Annoying. No. That you're like,
but I have no upper body strength.
Yeah. That's the other thing. I'm all arms. Yeah. I've got like my giant two children and I'm always like tossing them around. Yeah.
But my rose is that we worked my glutes and then I woke up the next day with really sore glutes.
That's huge.
And I was like, I did it.
You did it. What did you do? What did I do? Exercise?
I did like, well, we did a couple of things. I did sumo squats.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like
where you hold this like, heavy iron barbell thing, and you just like
a kettlebell, and then you
squats
just,
really do the trick. And I think we did a lot of like squatting, but I'm such a skeptic. I'm like, I don't have glutes. I'm never going to have them.
They're just not there.
And it was so funny because usually you have to like get out of bed to feel sore, and you go, oh, that feels sore. I literally like hadn't even opened my eyes, and I'm like, oh my god, my butt hurts. So that was a really exciting thing that I accessed my glutes.
That's really good. Rose.
Connection has been made.
It's a textbook rose. A plus for that one. That's a really good one. Thorn.
Actually, this is a throwback. Thorn. I don't know. I was reading this book that was kind of written in like 2008, and one of the characters referenced NBT sneakers. Do you remember these?
Yeah, yeah.
Were they the ones with the thick soles that were kind of curved?
Yes.
They were awful.
Ugly ass, big ass sneakers or trainers that they had convinced us we're going to like cure our cellulite. And also
exercise sneakers.
And then I Googled what the MBT stood for, and it was like Maasai barefoot technology. And I forgot that that was part of the scam too, that it was just like co-opting and appropriating this like indigenous, like, you know, basically people like culture of people who walk around barefoot because they did not have access to shoes. And so it's like, people like don't have cellulite. And it's like,
oh my God.
But we were all wearing them for like a couple of years, like pre-Obama, just that kind of like, you know, that year.
I remember the cellulite shoes. They were supposed to. I blocked it out.
Bonkers. But they existed. And that was just a moment of kind of, you know, it's retroactive shame. Yeah, it was a thorn. It was like, we really all did that.
The concept was wear these shoes that will imitate barefootedness.
Yes.
And it will cure your cellulite.
Yeah.
Did it work?
I don't know. These would not fly today.
My gosh. We haven't talked about this, and this wasn't even my thorn, but I just thought about the Dior campaign. Sauvage.
Oh my God, I forgot about it.
No, I don't.
It was put up and pulled down so quickly. There was a Dior fragrance launch called Sauvage, and the ad was like a Native an indigenous person. I don't know what's the problem.
Like savage?
Yes. And this is also the second, like, Dior keep trying to make this line happen. It was also the first time that they did, they launched this. It was when Johnny Depp was the face of the campaign. And this came out a couple of weeks after all the news broke about him physically abusing his wife. So there were posters of him all around town with Savage in the middle. It's like, guys,
it's like
maybe
they're not reading the news.
They don't go outside.
That's crazy.
It was pretty nuts.
With the Sauvage fragrance, they have this long explanation about how they came about it, and it's like, I'm sorry, you called it Sauvage, and then you have a Native American man dancing around a fire,
and their excuse was, we hired one Native person.
Exactly, that's always their excuse.
Yeah,
and they said it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and the community obviously was like, yeah, there's always going to be one guy. Yeah. Like, it literally was like, no, we're not okay with this.
Yeah,
it's like, the rest of us.
He's like, he's our Candace Owens. What are you trying to do? You can't.
Absolutely. That was a bad thorn.
I really hope that is the end of the Sauvage line. I'm tired of seeing it. It's just not working out, you guys. And then what is your bud for the week? Like a thing that you're kind of looking forward to?
Did you talk about your thorn?
Oh,
sorry.
My thorn? Your thorn? I don't know that it has anything to do with health and wellness, but I lost all my credit cards and cash, which I never have cash on me ever.
Yeah, same.
And I had just gone really okay back to like the self-care thing when your mom, I had to do some major negotiating with my own brain a couple days ago to, instead of rushing to the park to see my son to stop and get something to eat because I was about to pass out.
Yeah,
but I was like in a place where parking wasn't easy and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, if I stop, this will be an extra 45 minutes of like parking and I don't have cash. So I'm going to have to get cash because of parking. So I was like, just do it. You're hungry. You're not going to be good to your son if you're hungry. This is like the fact that I have to negotiate even, that like, gives you a glimpse into totally, crazy.
I go a whole day without eating all the time.
And so I did. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to go eat something.
I'm going to survive.
So I like go into like park my car, like cash only, blah, 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 blah. Go to the stupid ATM machine, get the cash out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, that was a little inconvenient, but it worked out. I ate. I feel fine. Of course. The next day, I draw like all these cards and all the cash fall out of my pocket. I was walking to another coffee shop to get a coffee, and I get there and I'm like, oh no, it fell out. And I run, I like retrace all my steps, nowhere to be found. I'm like, this is my payment for doing something good for myself. The universe is like, how dare you?
This is because I didn't rush to my child.
This is because I dared to stop. And and that was a, like basically a $200 cup of coffee and salad that I like stopped and gave myself. The universe had to take something away. So anyway, I lost my credit cards and my driver's license and a lot of cash. And if you're the person who found it and you're listening to this podcast, like, why didn't you just give it back? Like, I always give. I always go out of my way to give.
I will mail a thing.
Always. Yeah. Like, cell phones, credit cards, wallets, whatever. I always take it upon myself to give it back. And I have never, not once, gotten my wallet back when I've lost it.
I have a weird thing with lost wallets. Whenever I find a lost wallet or, like, a driver's license, I often know the person. It's really, really fucking weird. To the point, like, I remember one time, it was at, like, the most recent one, I was at the, like, a farmer's market, and someone had dropped a driver's license, and I picked it up, and I was like, oh, that's the guy who built my pool.
That is crazy. Just
texted me. I was like, hey, Chad, do you lose a driver's license?
Oh, my God.
He was like, wait, let me check. He's like, oh, I super did. It's really, really bizarre.
That's really creepy. That's
crazy. So, yeah, that's happened to me like maybe like 3 or 4 times in the last like couple of years. And I don't know what the universe is trying to or do. But that's, yeah, that's where I'm at with lost wallets.
Incredible.
Okay, so what is your bud for the week? What are you looking forward to?
I'm going to Miami.
I'm so jealous. I love Miami.
I'm so excited.
Oh, my fun. God.
I haven't taken care of myself in like a year, and now I'm going to Miami, and I'm like giddy with excitement.
Can I come?
So, and it is like when I go to Miami with my girlfriends, 3 of my favorite girlfriends, Rodney was like, what are you most looking forward to? And I said, I'm going to laugh so much. I'm going to laugh so much. And everything else is whatever. Like, we'll have some meals. We'll like lie around. We'll take a nap. It'll be great. But I cannot wait. And it's going to be weird because I have taken not great care of myself for the last year. And now it is just like 0 to 60. And I'm going to like rob a bank. I don't know what's going to happen. Like something insane is going to happen.
I remember texting you the first time I went to Miami, which was only like a couple of years ago. And before I was going to prison, I was like, you're going to love it. You're really going to love it. I'm like, it's Florida, whatever. And I got there and I was like, oh my God, this is everything the Will Smith song promised me and so much more.
Yeah.
It's insane.
We're staying at the Faena, which is
love
insane.
The Faena. Have you been to the one in Buenos Aires?
I've not gone to the one in but I wanted
that
to.
I went to the greatest party of my entire life at that hotel one night.
And it is just, I'm so excited. We're going to get massages. We're going to eat. We're going to lie on the beach. We're going to overtip like handsome waiters. It's going to be great.
My favorite thing that I experienced happening in Miami, we were like at the Fun and Blue or something. And there was this woman who was like sitting at a table like across from us. And she was very, very drunk. And she was like half passed out. And like, and her nipple had just kind of like popped out of her dress. And I was like, I'd want someone to tell me. I'm going to go. Do that. And I walked around and was like, hey, I just kind of, your nipple is kind of fallen out of your dress. And she just looked down at her nipple and she was like, oh, it's only going to fall out again. I just left it. And I was like, that's amazing. I love this town.
Oh, it's a wonderful town. It's what Vegas wants to be.
It is absolutely what
it's like
Vegas
what Vegas thinks
be.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's I'm the so greatest. Jealous.
I might
the
just greatest. Come on this trip.
Do it. Do it up. We've probably got an extra bed. How about your bed?
Let's see. What is my bud for the week? Oh, my God. I think for me, the bud for this week is the movie Hustlers. Mm. I cannot wait to see this movie. Mm. It combines all of my favorite things. Cardi B, J-Lo, really smart strippers, and scamming men. I just inject it into my veins. I'm ready. Can't wait to see it. So, yeah.
That is exciting. Yeah. How about you?
On Saturday, I'm going with other new mommies, and our husbands are coming too, but
I guess.
Like, really, it's for us.
Plus ones.
We're going to see Ali Wong at the Wiltern.
Oh, she's great.
So I'm really excited about
that's
that.
So
I watched her, was it her last special when I was towards the end of my pregnancy? Yeah. And I just thought I was going to like give birth. I was laughing. I mean, I watched it on my laptop. Yeah. Oh my God, she made me laugh so hard. So I'm also looking forward to laughing this weekend.
I spent 2 years with her, sitting next to her in a writer's room, and she is the funniest person in the world. But like constantly to a point that it's hard to get work done.
Yeah. She's a class clown.
It's relentless.
I'm so jealous.
Beautiful class clown.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She's very, very good.
I was just realizing I sat down with my friend Kate yesterday, who is Amy Poehler's producing partner. And she said, Amy says this thing that it's God is fair. And it's like, well, you either usually get like one or the other. You can't be like hot and funny. And now I'm realizing Ali Wong.
Yeah.
Ali Wong
there's
is the exception.
So many hoofs, but like, funny, like, okay.
Who? Wow. I thought of one person yesterday. But then
Tiffany Haddish, hilarious and hot.
And yeah, that's true. And Ali.
Tina Fey, hot. Like, there's a lot of like,
maybe women more than. We're very good at maximizing our potential in every way. We just strive and we work so hard. Men are like, I'm funny. Do I have to work out? And you're like,
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, it's better if you don't. That's fine.
Oh my gosh, we did it. Thanks so much for coming in. It was such a delight talking to you. Is there anything you want to talk about? Any like, anything you want to plug? Whether it's a cause or like an event, like anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Your organization.
Well, Superstores, we're coming back. Our fifth season premieres on September 20, whatever the Thursday is that week. Yeah. September 20 something. I should know this. 26th,
you know
I want to say.
We all have phones.
Thursday, September.
Superstore comes back September 26th, you
say. There we go. That's what I said. And then also something I'm really excited about. Yeah. I executive produced a new comedy for Netflix called Hentified that's written by these two awesome young Latinx writers. And it's set all in Boyle Heights. It's about the gentrification of Boyle Heights, young, beautiful Latinx people, their lives, their love, their laughter. And that premieres sometime next year on Netflix, but I'm really excited about that. And really excited.
Kind of the writers so we can track.
Marvin Lemus and Linda Yvette Chavez, these two beautiful, I call them kids because they were, when we started, they were like not 30 yet. I'm like, you're children. And I feel superior when I call them children. But they're so insanely, ridiculously talented. And it's always only just been my wildest dream to, as a producer, to like create opportunity for young people who don't often, you know, get the mentorship to succeed. As we were talking about, you know, getting in the door is one thing, but succeeding and thriving is a whole other. And so I'm really proud of it. And it's an awesome, funny, beautiful, beautiful show. And at this moment, you know, narratives about the Latinx community are vital and we need it. So it's a bright spot, I think, that will come for our community.
Also, I just like, I'm so, so grateful for any stories that are talking about the like gentrification in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And it is like my neighborhood at the moment is at a horrific point where everywhere I look, like the identity of the people that have been in the neighborhood for 30, 40 years. And also, you know, I am, you know, technically a gentrifier, but being raised by private equity companies.
Yeah.
There is a Sweet Green, which is basically just turned the neighborhood. And it's, and the friction of, you know, again, less housing. And again, parts of why these neighborhoods were actually able to survive in the first place to then just basically be stolen is just the violence of it is just so incredible to watch. And so, yeah, I'm just grateful for any stories, but also to kind of like find out, it's like, you know, how can I be helpful to my neighborhood? How can I actually not be part of a problem? And how do I help, you know, keep the people that have been here before me to still be able to stay here? So, yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to watch.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you next week. For show notes, including links to the products, services, people, and causes mentioned on this episode, you can subscribe to our official newsletter, Stuff and Things, through the link in our show notes or at foxybrownspod.com. See you next week.
Earios. Powered by Acast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well,
HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.